Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 41 degrees, foggy and misty. And out at the airport, they're showing 96% humidity, northeast winds to 9 miles per hour, and 1.5 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's Tanner Crab Fleet is going fishing. Native groups in Fairbanks are hosting a gathering to raise awareness about cases of missing and murdered Alaskan Native people. And an admitted arsonist has his sentencing hearing. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office is laying the groundwork for what may lead to criminal charges against former President Donald Trump. A grand jury is hearing evidence about Trump's role in alleged hush money payments to a porn star in 2016 to keep accusations of an extramarital affair from going public during Trump's presidential campaign. After Trump's company was recently convicted on fraud charges, a source tells NPR the DA's office has summoned witnesses to testify before a new grand jury. Trump, who has launched another run for president next year, is at risk of being charged with falsifying business records, which is a felony in New York. Trump maintains he's done nothing wrong. In the weeks since five Memphis police officers were fired and charged with the killing of Tyree Nichols, the Memphis Police Department is now disclosing there was a sixth officer taken off active duty after the black motorist died of injuries sustained during his arrest. The officer was relieved of duty when an internal investigation was launched earlier this month. Details from Christopher Blank of member station WKNO.
Officer Preston Hemphill's body cam records his arrival at the traffic stop where he helps two officers pull Tyree Nichols from his car. After Nichols flees on foot, Hemphill remains, not part of the group of five former policemen now indicted on second-degree murder charges. But the videos released Friday increased scrutiny on all involved in the incident. Memphis NAACP President Van Turner said more should be held accountable.
We want them to be terminated,
yes.
And we want them to suffer the consequences of their actions.
Two sheriff's deputies briefly seen in the video were also placed on leave, and now Hemphill, whose lawyer says is cooperating with the investigation. For NPR News, I'm Christopher Blank in Memphis.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken met today with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem after a spate of deadly violence. Blinken says he's calling on Israelis and Palestinians to take urgent steps to restore calm and to preserve the possibility of a future Palestinian state. This meeting also hinted at some issues in contention between the U.S. and Israel. NPR's Daniel Estrin has this from Tel Aviv.
Netanyahu's controversial plan to remake Israel's judiciary and weaken the powers of the Supreme Court has brought tens of thousands of pro-democracy Israelis to demonstrate this month. Netanyahu told Blinken Israel would remain a strong democracy. Blinken advocated building a consensus on new proposals. Blinken also brought up security aid to Ukraine. Israel has refused to give Ukraine military aid to protect Israel's ties with Russia. Blinken said,
Russia's ongoing atrocities only underscore the importance of providing support for all of Ukraine's needs, humanitarian, economic, and security.
Israel says it has sent ambulances to Ukrainian rescue teams, but that is short of military aid. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
It's NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. After 2 weeks of staying at the dock in protest, Kodiak's Tanner Crab fleet is finally going fishing. Crabbers agreed to a price with the island's processors on Saturday. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
Each of Kodiak's four canneries offered slightly different deals. Alaska Pacific Seafoods agreed to $3.35 per pound plus a retro payment, which can boost the final payout to fishermen after the season. Pacific Seafood offered something similar. OBI came up to $3.25 per pound plus a profit-sharing agreement. Trident Seafood stayed at a flat rate of $3.25 per pound. It wasn't exactly the deal Kodiak crabbers were hoping for, but ultimately, 80% of those in attendance at Saturday's meeting agreed. It was time to go fishing. Kevin Abina is the secretary and treasurer for the Kodiak Crab Alliance Cooperative, which represents the fisheries permit holders.
We stuck together. We're going to roll this thing out together, and we're looking at it as a victory.
Crabbers were initially offered $2.50 per pound ahead of the season, and at one point nearly 200 vessels up and down the Aleutian chain said they weren't going fishing unless they were offered a better price. Crabbers in Chignik and the South Peninsula started fishing last week after coming to an agreement with canneries in King Cove. But as of Friday, 130 vessels from Kodiak still weren't fishing. Alaska's Department of Fish and Game also confirmed it hadn't received any harvest reports or landings in that time.
It's important for these processors to know that we can stick together and organize and get a more fair deal.
With a deal in place, crabbers will now set their gear at noon on Monday for the start of Kodiak's Tanner Crab season. And fishing can go fast in Kodiak's Tanner Crab fishery. Last year, the fishery closed after just about a week. This year's quota is much larger. Abina says they're expecting a bottleneck at local canneries, and some vessels might be stuck waiting to unload their harvest. But despite all that, he says the fleet is more than ready.
For a fisherman, he's worried about when he's going fishing and how long he's going to be out fishing. Now we have the first piece of that puzzle. We have the when we're leaving, and that's huge.
Abina is also the skipper of the fishing vessel Big Blue. He says after the last 2 weeks, he'll feel a sense of relief when he pulls out of the harbor. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
The Fairbanks Native Association and Tanana Chiefs Conference hosted a gathering last Thursday to raise awareness about cases of missing and murdered Alaskan Native people. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
FNA and TCC are holding rallies every few months to keep the public from forgetting about unsolved cases, including those of Frank Minano, Debbie Nicktoon, Doran Sanford, and Willis Durendoff, who all went missing in the Fairbanks area in 2020. Doran Sanford's mom, Liz, thanked the people who filled the Chief David Salmon Tribal Hall for Thursday's rally.
It is very, very good to see you all. It reassures us. And we've been talking about hope. That's what we have.
Willis Durendoff's mom, Gladys, talked about the lasting pain of losing a loved one.
A person that loses someone that they can't find them, we think about them all the time. Where are they? Where are they? Where are they? That's all that goes through our head. We will never, ever forget this, and we would never give up.
That was echoed by Fairbanks Native Association Justice Director Shirley Lee.
The reality is that family grief cannot be held in suspense. It can't be filed away. Confusion and unanswered questions do not disappear.
Lee stressed the importance of not letting the cases fade from the public eye and thanked Regal Cinemas for helping raise awareness during the run of the movie Missing.
Put up a table with flyers and posters. Information about Debbie Nicktoon, Doran, Frank, and Willis, and others, hoping that maybe somebody will walk by that table and look at their pictures and look at the dates and go, oh, I remember. And that might trigger something.
Anyone with information is encouraged to contact law enforcement. State Trooper Captain Eric Spitzer highlighted an anonymous communications option.
Get out your cell phone, go to your app store, and look under AK Tips.
Captain Spitzer said the app provides encrypted transmission of information. Spitzer indicated at the last rally in October that a tip had led troopers to a suspect in a Fairbanks area missing persons case, and an arrest was imminent. In an update at yesterday's event, he said that's now anticipated to occur in February.
It was supposed to happen earlier and it didn't because of some legal issues. We want to make sure it's done right.
Captain Spitzer would not say whether the arrest is related to any of the four Fairbanks area missing persons cases from 2020. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
A sentencing hearing for admitted arsonist Jameson Gallion concluded on Wednesday at the state courthouse in Fairbanks. The proceeding included testimony from an arson victim, sentencing recommendations from the attorneys, and an apology from the 19-year-old Gallion. Dan Bross reports.
Jameson Gallion pleaded guilty last year to setting fire to seven buildings in the summer of 2021 in the Pleasant Valley, Two Rivers area east of Fairbanks. Some of the structures were occupied, but no one died in the fires. Two of the arsons targeted the Pleasant Valley Community Association, to which Gallion also sent taunting and threatening letters. In a phoned-in victim statement, Association President Wayne Shea questioned Gallion's self-control.
I don't know if he has a restraint. I don't know if he knows how to tell himself no. I don't know if he knows right from wrong.
Shea asked that Gallion be sentenced to the maximum allowable for the felony arson, burglary, criminal mischief, and terroristic threatening crimes. State Attorney Anna Ralph noted that Gallion was 17 when he committed the offenses and had no prior record, but recommended 35 years, with 18 suspended in light of the seriousness of his crimes.
This defendant terrorized an entire community and caused multiple named specific victims over a series of months.
Gallion's attorney, Ken Cavell, countered with a suggested sentence on the low end of the presumptive range, 14 years with 10 suspended.
Jameson is here for offenses he committed as a child. Now he stands to be subject to adult penalties.
The hearing closed with Gallion addressing the courtroom. He first turned toward the gallery and apologized to arson victims in attendance.
I hate what I've done to you. And it hurts my heart to see you in this position. The way I wish I could take it all back. I'm embarrassed of my actions and will forever be sorry for hurting and scaring everybody.
Gallion, who lived off Chena Hot Springs Road and has family in Two Rivers, did not explain what motivated the arsons, but said he understands he has problems and must find more suitable ways of dealing with them. Ginger and Donnie McKee, who escaped a fire that destroyed their multi-structure home and business property, say the state's recommended sentence is too short.
We do not accept 17 years to serve. We do not accept that.
Judge Paul Lyle set February 2nd as the sentencing date for Jameson Gallion. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Alaska Wildlife Alliance submitted 9 proposals aimed at protecting wolves for the Board of Game meeting this month. They all failed. The Alliance is one of the groups petitioning to list wolves on Prince of Wales Island as an endangered species. KRBD's Reagan Miller has more.
Many of the wolf-related proposals on the Board of Game's agenda last week were submitted by the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. That's an environmental group that's had a big hand in trying to add more protections for wolves on Prince of Wales Island. Carol Damberg is the president of the alliance. She says her organization was trying to help navigate what's been a controversial issue, wolf numbers on Prince of Wales.
Our goal was that we felt that it was an opportunity to provide the state and the folks that are on Prince of Wales some tools to be more precautionary in their management of wolves to make sure that they stay off the endangered species list.
Still, she was hopeful the board would see the merit of a few of the proposals. One of the proposals asked to shorten the length of time that trappers have to report their kill from 7 days to 48 hours. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game backed that proposal, saying it would help keep accurate and timely data available for biologists.
That didn't work for the board, and it didn't work for the folks that were testifying and saying that was a tough burden to put on them in terms of safety, as well as the communications out there are sketchy.
Danberg also saw promise in a proposal that aimed to increase the target number of wolves on the island. There are ongoing studies into the topic, and she thought that might be a good reason for the proposal.
But that was our opportunity to say, well, in the interim, maybe you should raise it up a little bit to be precautionary in your management until you really know the answers that you hope to get in your analysis.
But several board members said they felt the state was handling the situation well, despite past criticism. That included board member Lynn Kia.
By and large, I think they've got a pretty good handle on this population, and like I said, everything we've got going right now is sustainable.
Members of the public, as well as regional advisory committee members, referenced the proposals throughout 2 days of public comment. Bob Yonke is a member of the Ketchikan Advisory Committee. His organization opposed every proposal from the Alaska Wildlife Alliance. He said he felt like the proposal showed the organization's, quote, true colors.
For one, they are against trapping and hunting of wolves in Southeast. And number two, they have no knowledge of history or what or where wolves come from here.
But in her testimony to the Board of Game, Danberg said it's the opposite.
Although some folks try to tag us as anti-hunting and anti-trapping organization, we are not that at all. Many of our members, including myself, enjoy hunting, fishing, hiking, skiing, and all those fun things that happen in Alaska.
The board did support a wolf-related proposal brought forward by Ketchikan's Fish and Game Advisory Committee. The proposal asked to lengthen the hunting season for wolves. It will now start on September 1st, matching the federal season guidelines. Lengthening the season allows more chances to hunt wolves while already in the field, aside from the regular trapping season. The proposal was supported by the advisory committees in Craig and Klawak, but opposed by the East Prince of Wales group. That's a big reason why Fairbanks-based member Al Burnett was in support.
Generally, I'd want to give that extra portion to the trapping, or to the trapping season portion for the trappers to have. But again, I count, you know, 4 or 5 ACs that are supporting this, and countless or many other individuals, and only one AC opposed to this. So I'm gonna lean towards the ACs and the RAC on this one.
The state's Department of Fish and Game was neutral on the proposal, explaining that only around 6% of wolves are hunted before trapping season begins, so they weren't expecting a huge jump in harvest. Danberg says in the end she was disappointed but not surprised all of the Alliance proposals failed at the meeting.
That's the way that process works, I guess. It's okay. They feel like they are comfortable with what the state's doing, and anything that we proposed was not something they felt was necessary.
The Board of Game met in Ketchikan Friday through Monday and discussed more than 50 proposals. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Bethel musher Pete Kaiser won his 7th Kuskokwim 300 title Sunday afternoon, outpacing a field of top mushers on the notoriously unpredictable Kuskokwim River Trail. KYUK's Ben Matheson has the story.
Pete Kaiser arrived at the Bethel finish Sunday afternoon with his team of 11 dogs to meet a big crowd of friends and family ready to celebrate at the finish line.
It always feels good to get here first, so I feel good.
A warm weekend with fresh snow made for a tough trail with slower than usual racing, especially on the run up to Aniak. Kaiser's time of 41 hours and 56 minutes was the slowest winning time on the Kuskokwim 300 on the traditional race course in 15 years. Kaiser said that the first half of the race was as slow as he's ever seen it since he began racing in 2009. Fresh snow and temperatures climbing into the 30s made for warm race conditions.
I packed, had the parka in the sled, but I didn't put it on once, so pretty warm race. Actually enjoyable for mushers to not be freezing at 50 below, but you know, a little warm for the dogs since they weren't used to it, but they did fine with it. So,
Kaiser was the first musher to leave the Tulik-Sack checkpoint early Sunday morning after resting his team for a mandatory 4-hour break. But his race win was not locked up. He needed to outlast the surging 2019 winner Matthew Fahler, who was only 8 minutes behind going into the final 50-mile run of the race.
Yeah, I got a little comfortable out of Kelskeg, kind of feeling like I was probably in more control than I actually was. So we were just kind of coasting along. With, I think we had like a 25-minute lead out of Kelskeg. And then he snuck up on us all of a sudden, and he was probably 6 or 7 minutes behind us at one point going down. So we just kind of kept coasting and stayed in front of him, hoping to keep enough gas in the tank for a strong run in today from Tulik-Sack.
Kaiser rotated 4 leaders throughout the race, including 1 2-year-old leader named Mookie. His team included 4 2-year-olds in addition to his race veterans. Kaiser wins $25,000 for the victory and further chips away at the all-time win record. Only Jeff King has more K300 titles with his 9 victories. Kaiser's now won 7 of the past 9 races. He also won the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race in 2019. Willow musher Matthew Fahler arrived in second place 10 minutes after Kaiser. He said his team had a strong second half as they cut into Kaiser's lead as they ran downriver to Bethel.
We saved a little bit in the tank on the way up. That maybe helped us pass a few teams on the way down. But it's hard to beat Pete. You know, you have to have the only time we ever beat Pete was having a lead at Tulixac. So when you don't have a lead on Pete at Tulixac, it's pretty difficult.
Nanana musher Eddie Burke Jr. earned third place in his second K300. He moved up 9 spots from his 12th place finish last year. He said that the snowy and wet conditions were a big change from the hard and fast trails that he's been training on in the interior.
We were kind of wallowing around out there and lots of water, but dogs did well and they took right to it.
Salcha musher Jacob Whitcup finished in fourth place in his first K300, while 2021 champion Richie Deal arrived in fifth place. 21 mushers started the race Friday evening in Bethel. There was one scratch as of Sunday evening. Queethluck musher Jason Pavla ended his race at the Tulixac checkpoint after he fell on the ice outside of Kalskeg and injured his shoulder. For KYUK News, I'm Ben Matheson in Bethel.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by GCI.
GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Are electric vehicles heading into a price war? I'm Nova Safa with a Marketplace Minute. Ford today cut prices by as much as 8% for its Mustang Mach-E electric crossover SUV. This follows Tesla's price cuts of as much as 20%, which helped increase sales at that EV maker. Ford Mach-E now retails for a starting price of nearly $47,000. Europe's biggest economy, Germany, shrank by 0.2% in the final months of last year. The decline was the country's first in almost 2 years. It was attributed to lower consumer spending and surging inflation. TikTok's chief executive will testify in March before a congressional committee, his first appearance at a hearing in the Capitol. TikTok is under scrutiny over national security concerns. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, a leader in commercial real estate.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Monday. It is the 30th day of January, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:16. It will set again at 5:30. That will give us 8 hours and 14 minutes of misty sunshine, a gain of 4 minutes and 19 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 48 degrees, set in 1963, 1968, and in 1985. And our record low was -9, set in 1989. Currently 41 degrees. It's been 41 degrees all day long. Out at the airport, they are showing northeast winds to 9 miles per hour, only 1.5 miles of visibility. They're calling for a likelihood of rain this afternoon, areas of fog at least until 1. Otherwise, cloudy skies today with a high near 39, northeast winds to 5. Rain is likely tonight, too, with cloudy skies overnight, low around 36, north winds to 10. And rain is likely tomorrow morning, then rain and snow between 7 a.m. and 1 p.m., followed by a chance of rain after 1 p.m. Cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 39, north winds to 10. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory for tomorrow. For today, east winds to 15 knots and seas to 7 feet. For tonight, northeast 15, seas to 6 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest 25, except north 20, north of Dangerous Cape, seas to 7 feet tomorrow. For Tuesday night through Wednesday, northwest 25, seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, northeast 20 today, seas to 5 feet. For tonight, northeast 20 seas to 5 feet, and for tomorrow, north 15 seas to 3 feet. For Tuesday night in the Shelikof, they are calling for west winds to 20 seas to 5 feet, northwest 20 on Wednesday, northwest 15 on Thursday. Taking a look at our local tides, we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide will be at 4:11 this afternoon here on the east side. That'll be a 1.3-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:56 this evening of 5.2 feet. Our middle-of-the-night low tide will be at 3 a.m. and be 4 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 9:38 a.m. and be 8.2 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will be at 4:31 this afternoon, be 2.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:54, about 11 p.m., of 8.7 feet. Your middle of the night low tide will be at 4 a.m. and be 6.1 feet, and your high tide tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 10:04 and be 12.3 feet. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly is set to have 3 meetings in a row starting tomorrow. On Tuesday, they will have an assembly special meeting in the Borough Assembly chambers at 11:30 a.m. On Wednesday, they will be having another special meeting in the Borough Assembly chambers at 12:15 p.m. And on Thursday, they will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly chambers at 6:30 p.m., the regular time. All meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And remember, assembly meetings are live streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. If you subscribe, they will send you live stream notifications. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Salmon Camp Registration Lottery is open. The Kodiak Refuge will be having summer science camps for students going into kindergarten through eighth grade. Find registration packets on the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge website or stop by the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center. Packets are available at the front door or inside during open hours, which are Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. And don't forget the deadline to enter is March 31st. 3 seats are up for election for the Kodiak Electric Association's Board of Directors. The deadline for filing petitions is March 15th, 2023. The Board of Directors consists of 9 elected voting members and 1 United States Coast Guard appointed non-voting liaison. This year, the seats currently up are held by Ron Aculari, Tyler Cornelis, and Ben Milstein. All 3 seats are for 3-year terms. KEA members locally elect KEA's directors. Candidate petition packets are available by contacting the KEA office. To be eligible, you must be a member of KEA. Completed candidate petition packets must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, March 15th at the KEA office. That's at 1614 Mill Bay Road. Can we talk museums for a moment? For instance, whose objects deserve a place on the shelves? Whose story deserves a spot in the permanent gallery? And whose perspective is the most important? Well, yours is. The Kodiak History Museum is making space for your perspective, and they need to hear from you. What stories would you like to see shared in their new temporary exhibit? Tell them why your idea is museum-worthy, and they'll make it happen. Visit them online at kodiakhistorymuseum.org. Or call 907-486-5920 for more information. And the Alaska Business Development Center will be providing in-person tax preparation again in many villages throughout rural Alaska. If you do live in rural Alaska, don't send in your tax documents to ABDC yet. There's a good chance their preparers are coming out to you. To stay updated on whether ABDC is preparing taxes in your community, visit their website. That's at www.abdc.org. Mm-hmm.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.